numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome to a new week. Welcome to downtown Las Vegas. I'm Jarrett Smith, in for Gil Alexander all week. So hope you get used to this because you're going to be seeing a lot of me this week. Kelly Bidlin is here as well. He's always here. It seems like morning, noon, and night, 24/7. You got your cot underneath the desk here that nobody can see. He just woke up and popped up, and then he was at work. How was your weekend, man, pal? I heard you were not one of the entire gambling Twitter universe that won on Johnny Vegas yesterday.
Yeah, no, I wasn't, Jared. But
that's
yes,
a shame. I saw Wes. Congrats to you, Wes. I saw you.
Yeah,
on
Wes
it.
Hit, and like we were laughing about before the show. I think
every single person. I didn't bet it.
I bet him. It was the rare. You kind of kick yourself because you bet. I bet him first round leader.
Yes.
And then I didn't bet him to win the thing. You know,
love but that. That always feels good.
I mean, Johnny Vegas, he just doesn't win that much. First win since 2017. He got
good
it done
him.
Though. I know there was a lot of people on Vegas, so I was a big hit. We had a couple fans of the show that were sitting over here while Dustin and I were doing Live Bet Sunday yesterday, and they were one of the guys, and I'm blanking on names right now, but one of the guys, Jared, had come up to me, and he was like, yeah, I just played craps downstairs for like 2.5 hours and just blew through a grand. He's like, I hope I get this $13 ticket on this 90-1 home, and it hit, so he broke even. So
that's
happy people won.
I mean, so I've been there on the down a grand in craps department. To follow that up with an outright winner in golf.
On a $13 ticket.
On a $13 ticket, that gentleman or lady. Good for him, good for her. Fun show. Speaking of Vegas, by the way, so I usually give myself, I've now lived here, actually next week will be my 2-year anniversary of moving to Vegas.
Is that all it is? There are certain people like
years.
You and Dustin that I'm like, I feel like I've been here for 5, 6, 7 years now.
Well, it's, you know, the song, the Tony Bennett song, I left my heart in San Francisco. I did not leave my heart in New York. My heart's here.
I hear you, man.
This is where I feel. It's all, 2 years here is like, it feels more like home than 2 decades in New York. But my point being, we've been dealing with the traffic bug for like over a year now.
Yes.
So if you were here for the Super Bowl, if you've been here in the last year or so, you probably noticed the traffic. It's really been bad.
F1, yep.
Yeah, oh, the F1, it was terrible. And then, of course, on the Strip for the Friday before the Super Bowl on the Strip, it was like Gotham City. Like it was like Gotham City right before the Riddler came. Like it was just like really weird. The traffic everywhere bad. But the I-15 four lanes this morning went back to four lanes. So it was the entire highway was shut down all weekend. Getting here on Saturday, I had to go like around, and we're used to that. It has these random shutdowns on I-15, but the caveat was it's going to be shut down this weekend, but when it reopens on Monday morning, four lanes.
I didn't know either one of these, by the way. You and I both live south side of town.
I'm a traffic guy. I've got all the apps on my phone. I get alerts.
Like,
I'm a Vegas nerd now.
Luckily, you and I are both the type that show up earlier to shows
than maybe others.
Okay, so yesterday I'm coming up for Live Bet Sunday. 15 shut down. I'm like,
it was rough. Dave Ross was late on Saturday.
Yeah, everybody's on the side street.
Sorry, Dave, I had to call you out.
Like, I had no idea. Like, you're talking about being the traffic nerd.
I'm a traffic nerd. I'm a former news reporter. I know all this stuff. I know. The second I moved here, I followed, like, all the traffic. By the way, I made a joke on social media, like, the state flower of Nevada is a traffic cone. I've seen that joke before. I stole it from other people. I'm not going to take credit for it. But my point being, I usually give myself an extra 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, but I did that
today, and I forgot that the flames were open. I got here like 10 minutes before I even was supposed to. I sat in my car for 5 minutes. I didn't know what to do. I was like, it's too early for me to go in. It's too early.
That's right. I went side streets up again today. I didn't know when it was reopening. So, yeah, you were
– oh, you did side streets
today. We're excited
today
because Jared came in here and brought me that news.
I was jacked up this morning. There is no greater feeling. Tell me a better feeling, other than, you know, maybe a $13 ticket on a 90-1. When you're getting, you know, mentally preparing for a bad commute, like I'm sitting in traffic, and then there's no traffic, and you just fly. So maybe it's going to be a good day. It wasn't a great weekend for me, nerfy-wise. Wasn't a great weekend for me, baseball betting-wise. I'm going through the ups and the downs. It was a great week after the All-Star break. That weekend back from the All-Star break was like nails. And then this past week, the first full week, has not been very good. We'll try to reload it this week. I'm already seeing some people tweeting us. They want nerfy stuff. I'll give you some nerfy stuff at some point today. And, yeah, I think we're going to do at some point this week, probably not tonight because I have plans. So I won't have time to do the research. But before Thursday, which is the first day of the new month, I will give you an official wager for most wins in August. I know that is a very popular wager on this show. You guys have already hit one this year. So, well, plenty of baseball stuff. But
don't give me any credit. Gil has.
I mean, listen, you guys are a collective. It's like the royal we in the Big Lebowski. The royal we.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say the big story yesterday was, I don't want to say it was the Olympics, but I'm seeing it, you know, lead every show, you know, on the networks here this morning with what Team USA did on the men's basketball hardwood yesterday. They're a $5 favorite to win gold. Like, them winning by 26 over one of the random European nations, I don't want it to move the needle. But it's funny how I just see all these stories about, oh, Jason Tatum didn't play, and then this and that, and Embiid stinks, get him off the team. Guys, they're the best players in the sport. Like, just let them go to the Olympics and play a little bit, and let's not, like, make everything a headline like it is when they play in the NBA every night. Like, it feels like we're glamour, like, just, like, idolizing and, like, over-glamming every little minute detail of what happens in the Olympics for basketball. To me, this doesn't feel like something that's a story, that Jason Tatum didn't get a whole lot of minutes and Joel Embiid's kind of in the Olympics.
Yeah.
The Olympics.
It's, I think it's interesting to me, Jared, but I think for a couple reasons. The international game is now developed to a point, right, where you have guys that we see this all the time in the NBA, but you need specialists and role players, if you will, like Derek White and Drew Holiday, who are so amazing both sides of the ball, that just help fill out this team better, that are getting a lot of these minutes over, you know, quote-unquote, some bigger star players. And that's been interesting. I think just to see how far the international game has come, that we can't just say, hey, you know, here's the U.S.'s seven best players. We're just going to put them all out on the court. No, the chemistry matters. The roles matter.
Exactly.
And that's important. Now, I do think that's been interesting with Joel Embiid. It just the tandem of Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo has been so effective and so great.
Yeah.
And Embiid's been meh, that, like you're saying, they're so talented that we might be overreacting. Like, it's not like he's getting replaced by a bunch of scrubs. It's Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo. They're two of the best defenders in the NBA. And the Tatum stuff is, look, it's, again, credit to the international game. Serbia is not a joke opponent that they had to play yesterday.
No.
The best player in the world in the front court, right? They have quality.
Not much else, though.
They have a couple quality players in the back court.
They have a couple guys that can play.
Did the U.S. had to do? They had to run out a bunch of bigs and guards, which means that your redundancy at forward with LeBron, Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, someone's going to get left out. And Durant finally played yesterday, and when he's shooting lights out and doesn't miss a shot till, I don't know, I think it was late in the third quarter when he finally missed, someone's not going to play, and that was Jason Tatum.
Durant 8-for-9 yesterday, 23 points. He looks fantastic. I mean, again, U.S. was a $5 favorite. They were a double-digit favorite in this game. It was tight in the first half. I think they still covered the first half number, barely.
They did, yeah.
But I laugh how I see the same discourse. It's just funny to me. I'm not saying that it's not warranted. It's funny to me that you have a collective of the best players in the sport all playing together that have not played together with this unit yet, and we're kind of, you know, haggling about how many minutes each guy plays. Like, just let them go play. They just kicked the crap out of Serbia. Like, who cares that Embiid didn't look great? It's hard to play at this level.
Yeah,
I'm. If they struggle to a point where they lose, I'm okay with the discourse. But when they win by 26, I'm just like, what are we really, like, you know, upset about here?
I don't think there's anything to be upset about.
Yeah, I think it's funny how it's like biggest key to winning gold. Like, all they have to do is show up, and they're probably going to win gold.
They're also in the easiest group, and they just beat the toughest opponent.
They just destroyed Serbia in the second half.
They are rolling into the quarters. No worries there. But, like, I do laugh.
They're going to win every game by double digits.
There are two things I laugh about, though, Jared. Like, yes, I just talked about the redundancy, and I get it. But, like, Jason Tatum, like, yes, I've been kind of one of those haters over the years. But, like, this is why. You're not at the same level.
You're right. I think that's the funny part.
You've won a championship now. That's great.
Clearly, you're on
the best team in the NBA. That's awesome. But, like, you're not LeBron James. You're not Kevin Durant. Like, that's just a fact. Like, that is, for all of us that have brought that up before, it's not supposed to be hate. When Steve Kerr feels the exact same way in a big-time Olympics game like that, kind of it kind of shows that. Jared, the other thing, though, is Dude's, you know, how old is LeBron James now? 40?
He's 74.
Still, he's still the best player on the team. 39, sorry. 40 in December.
Wow, he's like, older than me.
Like, watching him in these warm-up games.
And I feel
games,
ancient watching these guys.
Yeah, like, watching him in the exhibition games, and then yesterday, if you watch, like, he's still the best player for the United States, and he's 39 years old. Yeah. Check in with me next Olympics. Maybe he won't be by then. Maybe.
I don't think he's going to be in the next Olympics.
I wouldn't think so either. But
it actually is funny. There is a sense of nostalgia watching him now for me.
Yeah.
Because you really do, at some point, that retirement, like, how do you think he's going to announce it? You think he's going to announce it? He's going to give himself at least a full year.
Oh, I think it'll be
He might give himself a two-year goodbye journey. He might say, in 2 years, I'm gone. he might give himself 2 years.
Biggest guess would be it's next season, and he's hoping and praying Bronny takes a little bit of a step forward this year so he can force him onto the 15-man roster for next season. And then
they can actually play together.
And then it is a full-year victory lap goodbye tour.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy that we're at that point, but it's funny to me when I watch. This
is nostalgic, though, Jerry. Like, you are right, because what he's doing to these other countries' teams, right, it reminds you of LeBron's early days in the NBA, where now the NBA is so specialized.
Defenses
he's running into are so high level that he's not able to
be effective. And it's an 82-game regular season. He's not doing that for all the games. These are the Olympics every time you put on the uniform. Especially in the actual games that matter. Really excited for the show. Mark Borchardt, Jay Kahn going to come with us in the next hour. But we'll come back. We'll get into a little bit of what's taking place in the NFL. Because I'll be honest, baseball, man, when's baseball season over? Numbers game continues next on VSiN.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, guess what? We're releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide this Thursday. I've got two bets in it. Both of them are plus money. You're going to be excited for it. Whoa, hey, hi-oh, hey now. I actually, I bet them over the weekend. I wrote them up over the weekend, bet them over the weekend, and I got very excited about them because it was my first two college football wagers of the season. Sign up before the end of July. You receive both the college football and the NFL guide, plus full VSiN Pro access and our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data like our betting splits, all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount price of just $175. Or sign up for a monthly subscription. Get your first 30 days for only $19. See everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Don't miss out on the preseason deal. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. Man, it feels good to say preseason. We have an NFL game this week.
That is crazy.
This week. What? I mean, we're here. It's August, guys.
We'll talk some NFL preseason, I think, betting tips and everything over the next couple of days.
Can we get Steve Fezzik on at some point?
Yeah, we can, for sure.
That, to me, is – he is the – so Steve put out a tweet last year. He might be listening. He's a frequent listener of the network. He put out a tweet last year about the preseason, and it was the first time that I really – I would say tried – to, like, bet it. Like, really bet it. Like, you know, you're watching it. Oh, football's back. I'll throw a few. That's one thing. But when you actually try, like, you're really putting in the work during the week with the rosters. You're making lists of Twitter people, of reporters and things so you can try to track the movement. Like, that's what I'm talking about when I say try. Like, obviously, it's not like Yoda here. Like, do or do not. There is no try. But it was, like, really put effort into it. And it's because he was one of the ones that really said, hey, there's value. You got to do your work, though. And that's the thing. We're kind of in that lazy mode in August. We're like, we don't want to do work yet because we know the football season's really coming soon.
Yeah.
It's like the warm-up stage. We don't want to go full sprint during the warm-up stage, but hey, money's money.
I like betting it. What I'll end up having, Jared, is like anywhere between like a total of 3 to 6 bets for the entire preseason. But like,
sounds about right.
But I kind of narrow it down, and we'll talk more about this later in the week. But yeah, for me, it's a lot about coaches. Like, there are coaches that take it more seriously than others.
Yep.
And to me, it's exploiting quarterback depth charts for the most part. Like, yep. There are a lot of teams that their third stringer is just as good as another team's second stringer. And then if you're going to be able to throw your second stringer and third stringer in there for way more amount of time, that just gives you an extra leg up. So I think it's that. And then it's a big-time information game, right? It's like handicapping the NBA every day. Like, you've got to be tweet deck up 24/7 and get some of the news that's going to come down about who's going to be playing, how long they're going to be playing, all that stuff.
Yeah, maybe we'll try to get Steve on this week. If not, we'll try to get a professional NFL bettor on. Maybe Crack can come on. Does he usually come on during the week, or is that only with Gil?
Usually only with Gil.
Only with Gil. Well, maybe because he likes me, because I do a Fox show with him, that maybe we can get Crack. I bet because it's me. Tell him it's me.
He'd probably come in with
you. I bet he would. Because there's a lot. Listen, there's a lot of meat on the bone there with the preseason. If you really are willing to do the work, there is a lot of opportunity. So it's not as a I would say the pros bet it just as much. It's just another game to them. But it, for the novices, for the rec bettors out there, that, you know, if the tweet that Steve put out last year was something along the lines of, there's really three opinions that you can have. One of them's okay, one of them's really good, and one of them's wrong. The opinion that's okay is, I know that there's value there, I'm just not willing to do the work. Mm. Like, that's an acceptable opinion to have. Like, if you're not willing to do the work, admit that you're not willing to do the work, and just say, I understand that there's value there, I'm just not willing to do the work. The opinion that's obviously the elite is, I know there's value there, and I'm willing to put in the work. The opinion that's wrong, that I was frankly of the belief on earlier in my career, is that there isn't value. Mm. And that, it doesn't count, it doesn't mean anything. That's not the right opinion about the NFL preseason.
Yep, agreed.
It's just not correct. There is value there. You just have to be willing to do the work. All right, let's get to some NFL news, because over the weekend, some really – just like this is one of those, like, embarrassment of riches, the opposite of the situation for New England.
Yeah.
Because they were already up against it this year, and now one of their best players is – I mean, this does not sound good. Defensive tackle Christian Barmore, I apologize if I mispronounced that last name, diagnosed with blood clots over the weekend. That is a serious, I don't even want to call it an injury. That's an illness. That's an ailment. And he'll be out indefinitely. So the way that I graded New England this year, offense arguably worst unit in the NFL, especially the skill position group, the offensive line. And the defense was kind of a top 15, like fringe top 15 unit. Like, you know, they could be a top half unit this year if things broke their way.
For sure, yeah.
He's one of the best players in the league. It's going to make it a lot harder for them to be a top 15 unit, because teams are going to try to run the ball on them, obviously. Mm-hmm. You want to get a lead on a team that struggles to come back and struggles to play. You want to keep that offense on the sidelines. You know that you have an advantage if you take a two-score lead on this team, because they just can't come back. So if their defense is on the field longer and longer, and they have less and less beef in the middle because of Christian, that's just going to make things really hard for Gerard Mayo this year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, I think one of the biggest challenges this defense, and we talked a lot, Gil and I talked a lot about this last week. I think they're a talented group. I'm with you. I have them, you know, definitely top half, maybe even top third defensively. It was just the biggest challenge they were going to have was their offense, right? As a defense, the biggest challenge you're going to have is that your offense is going to give you no support whatsoever. You're going to be stuck, you know, defending some short fields and everything like that. So that was already going to be a problem. Now, if injuries start to rack up, I think this team's in serious problems. I know it's a team that you and I have already bet against. Basically, I have a fewest wins in the NFL bet on them, and then you're under their win total.
Yeah, I bet under 5 wins at stations about 2 weeks ago. It was a flat even odds. I thought so. The 4.5, which was being dealt at around plus 120-ish.
Yeah. So I'm seeing at DraftKings right now, 125.
Yeah. So the way that I would grade it is 50 cents for each half win. That's kind of the going rate in the NFL for a half win. Maybe 45 cents if you want to be kind. So simple math, right? Like, if I got even odds at 5 wins, it means 5 I would push, 6 I would lose, 4 I would win. So under 5.5, if I'm laying minus 120, minus 130, that's pretty good. That's a decent bet. Now it's stations is dealing under 5, minus 125. At that point, I would just play the plus 120 under 4.5. Because again, 50 cents.
Yeah.
I'd rather just have the plus money. It's about the same bet. under 4.5 plus 120 plus 125, under 5 minus 125. It's kind of the same bet. Pick your poison.
I think when we're talking a win total that low, honestly, you and I should probably have both of these bets. Like, it's like,
yeah.
Because what, you know, what are the chances they go under the win total and then don't hit fewest wins, right?
I'm not going to bet fewest wins just because I think there's going to be a chance at some point to bet it again.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't like the index markets. The index markets that don't cash till the end of the year scare me. Unless I'm getting a big whopper of a number.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what did you get? 2-1, 3-1?
I was 4-1.
Right, that's not bad. That's not bad.
Plus 390.
That's not bad. It's probably like 2-1 now.
Plus 320 at DraftKings.
Yeah,
but shop around. That's one I've seen different numbers on.
I would want more for that. I think 4-1's fine. I would say 5-1's probably what I was thinking for that. Because there's just so many teams. And then the dead heat rules, you chop it up. It's tough. It's tough to win those. I did make a bet in a similar market for the Jets, but it was the last undefeated team. And the reason why I'm a little bit feeling better about that is because I don't have to wait till February to cash it, or
right.
January. Like, theoretically, I could cash it in the first couple weeks. Probably not. But like to me, that's like a 4 or 5 week bet. Instead of an 8 to 17 week bet. But I think they're the worst team in the league. So the way I graded them out, my preseason ranking on them is the third worst team in the league, but not by, like, Carolina and New York are like right there.
Mm.
Offensively, they're the worst.
Yeah.
They are the worst. Yep. I have them graded as the worst quarterback situation in the league. Second worst. I have the Knicks situation worse.
The Knicks?
Yeah, and then I have them. I have New England tied. I have New England. No, I have the Giants. I have the Giants slightly ahead of Brissette. I have Daniel Jones.
Look at Jared. Just keep going.
Knicks and Stidham. What did you say? What did I get that wrong?
You said New York Knicks.
Oh no, Knicks. Bo Knicks.
Oh, Bo Knicks.
Bo Knicks. I mean, the New York Knicks, their quarterback situation's not is actually. I would,
wow, we're a disaster.
I
here.
Might
okay.
trust Jalen Brunson to play quarterback over Bo Knicks. I honestly might at this point. I've got Levis and Brissette tied 30. Like they're the second tied for the second worst. The reason why I don't like New England is because I think their O-line's worse and their receivers are worse. They don't have DeAndre Hopkins.
They have the worst skill group in the NFL.
They do have the worst skill group in the league. So I've got – actually, to be fair, I've got them as the 31st worst O-line. I've got Arizona's O-line worse. But I've got them as a top 10 secondary and a top 20 front seven.
Yeah.
So this ain't going to help that. That's for sure. New England's the dregs of the kegs this year. I think I don't see how. Like that's why I really like 5 wins. I'm like I've got to lose 6. They got to win 6 games for me to lose this bet. Where are their 6 wins on their schedule? Find 6 wins.
The other one I'm adding at some point. I've been meaning to is last winless team too. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Like
I like that one more.
Tough.
I like that one more than the fewest wins.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather get my money earlier in the season. Mark Borchardt, MLB better comes next here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Monday morning, downtown Las Vegas, Jared Smith in for Gil Alexander. Kelly Bidlin here with us as well. Now joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, he is a professional Major League Baseball bettor. Follow him at X, at base winner, Mark Borchardt. Mark, great to be with you here this morning because baseball really, we're at that point, right, where the season, even though the All-Star break was just very recently, we're way more than halfway through the season. The grind of the season has taken its toll. When you get to this late July, early August trade deadline time where there's just so many things changing, especially over the next 24 to 48 hours, is this a different period for you when you're analyzing the markets than, let's say, just a random day in June or maybe even a random day in September?
Well, you've got to be abreast of everything that's going on. So for me, it's gotten easier over the years, Jared, because I've automated a lot of my process. So today I was smiling because I was able to change because I think Isak Paredes is in with the Cubs and stuff. So a lot of it for me has been automated. And to be fair, there's a lot of really good information sources outside of basewinner.com. Of course, that's a great source for baseball handicapping information as well. But So being able to automate a lot of the who's on first, what's on second type thing is this challenge as a handicapper. And for years I would have to do it manually, and it would just be dreadful right about now because you don't know what's going on. I don't know who's on first, but Abbott and Costello. I don't know if you're young and you're too young to remember that whole routine, but there's some guys listening that probably remember that. But literally you have to know that. I mean, Isaac Parade is on first for the Cubs. So being able to balance that out is a lot easier when you have it automated, but it's cool for me. And the other thing too is like, I think a lot of people have these daunting, like you got to do preseason college football numbers, which that must be a nightmare nowadays.
Oh yeah.
Pro football, everything's kind of coming up. Right. And so you have all this stuff at the end of it. So it's harder, but for me doing baseball, I really enjoy it. I like seeing how these general managers work and to be fair, I don't know everything what these guys are going to do. I don't think these guys know what they're going to do day to day. So it's exciting.
It really is. And I think the Cubs, I'm glad you brought that up, is a really good example because I think conventional wisdom would say they're what? A last place team in the division, if not second to last. They're sellers at the deadline. And they're like, oh, not so fast, my friend. We're going to make all these trades. Now, I know they gave up a major league player in Christopher Morel to get Isaac Paredes, but they made another deal over the weekend too. So it's kind of like you're playing blackjack, and we get to see the dealers hold cards. Like, we get to see what these general managers are trying to do, and maybe we were wrong about the Cubs being, you know, sellers. Maybe they're going to try to make a run at this thing, or maybe they're trying to set up their team for down the road. This is a week where we get to see the dealers hold cards because it's the trade deadline.
Yeah, it's super cool. And, Tampa Bay, like they got rid of Eflin, they got rid of Savale. So are they throwing in the towel? You know what? You never know with Tampa Bay. Maybe they know more than we do. And it looks like that Tampa Bay organization, if you look at like how they're going to set up next season with the starting pitching, it's pretty amazing how these guys with such a low budget can do things. And I have a lot of respect for these guys. Talk about million-dollar decisions, and they have to do it every day. So a tough job for a GM, I think.
Yeah, it really is. All right, let's get to today's card. We got a doubleheader on the books today. Let's talk about this Orioles team. I am on them at a pretty decent plus price to win the AL East. I felt great about myself going into that last weekend before the All-Star break, then that crazy series with the Yankees. It's been weird for both teams at the top of the American League East out of the break. Great series for the Yankees over the weekend. I don't know how they won the game the other night, but I am very interested to see how Baltimore responds today because they've kind of been up against it. Tough series for them over the weekend against San Diego. They got to win yesterday to avoid a sweep, but not the two best pitchers on the mound for Baltimore today, but we do get a chance to see Zach Eflin, who you mentioned a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I think this is priced too high for the Orioles. I've got a price at -108, which would show significant value with the Blue Jays and Rodriguez. I think Rodriguez is as good by my numbers as Eflin. I use strikeout percentage, walk percentage, and ground ball percentage. Those are kind of the tenets of my number. And you look at Yuriel Rodriguez strikeout percentage last 10 from a median standpoint, it's 26.6%. Puts him in the 83rd percentile. Conversely, the same number with Eflin, 18.9%, puts him in the 29th percentile. So you get an edge there. And if you look at sometimes, I like to look at this Stuff Plus number. The Athletic puts it out, a guy named Eno Saris, who's just really a great fantasy guy. But I think that if you can pick information from him as a handicapper, I think it really helps you. Anyway, his Stuff Plus figure, which looks at 11 different components of a pitch, vertical drop, velocity, change of speed, that sort of stuff, really granular stuff. Rodriguez has the better Stuff Plus number, 52 percentile. Versus Zach Eflin, 44 percentile. And then you have a hard hit per nine number. Rodriguez is a little bit better there too. 9.5 hard hits per nine, which is close to the top quartile against an Eflin, which is 10.3 hard hits per nine, which is about league average. So I think we get a little bit of an edge, believe it or not, in the pitching based on the recent numbers. Offensively, the Blue Jays kind of coming around here. I have them ranked 13th in baseball, and I think the Orioles are an interesting piece, Jared. I really like them. They have like +250 to win that division, so I have a couple tickets on them plus 250. I'm looking right now at this AL East race as kind of a pick 'em, right?
Yeah.
So, but I'm hoping the Orioles can hold on, just because of my personal bets on them.
I feel you, Mark Borchard, pro MLB better. Follow him at X at Base Winner. Great data. That was, I didn't know that. The ground ball percentage being part of your stew there. I'm gonna add that to my mix. That's not something I look at as often. As maybe I should. See, even I get to learn stuff when we bring on guests that I haven't had a chance to converse with. So great stuff, Mark. All right, rest of today's card. Not the most enticing Monday slate. That's kind of how Mondays are. Anything else of note for you today as I let you kind of have free reign here?
Yeah, I put out a card every day, and I think the top play for me, and those of you who have been following me for a while know that I love to play a two-team parlay. I think the best two-team parlay here today is to go with the Pirates and Paul Skenes. First five, though. I like Paul Skenes. He's my number two pitcher, only behind Chris Sale. And I've got them going against Jake Bloss and the Houston Astros. Jake Bloss, not the boss by my numbers. You look at the board today, and Skenes has the highest strikeout percentage on the board. Check that, the second highest strikeout percentage on the board at 32.6% strikeout percentage, 97th percentile. Well, who's number one? It's Nick Pivetta from the Red Sox. I'm going to pass on that game. I do like Logan Gilbert as well, but I'm going to put Skenes in a parlay with the Royals and Alec Marsh. I'm not a huge fan of Marsh, but I have him better than league average. But this Chris Flexen is really poor. I've got him. I mean, I can't see how you can make a case for him. We talked about that stuff plus number. That is a one percentile number, so he's probably the second worst stuff plus. Yeah, and then if you look at Flexen's strikeout percentage, last 10 median, it's 16.2%, super low, 15th percentile. Of course, you got the White Sox offense, which is the worst offense in baseball, and a bullpen, although they have been getting better, still 20th in baseball. So what I did is I put the first five Pirates, first five Royals, and you get about plus 170 when both
like
those things hit. Yeah.
So I'm going to get your opinion on the Skenes stuff, because I feel like the historical context of him winning Cy Young, it's hard to get there because of the innings pitched. But we're in a kind of different generation, and I've been kind of calling him the exception to the rule. The number is absurd. It's like he is the third favorite on the board right now behind Sale and I think it's Wheeler, right?
Wheeler,
Sale,
yeah.
And Wheeler. I think Sale deserves to be the favorite. But can he really – does the Skenes have any win equity in this market, or is it just kind of a circus show that this number is going to come all the way down, he's going to win Rookie of the Year, and it'll be Sale or Wheeler that'll win Cy Young probably?
Well, for me personally, I think it depends if you watch him pitch. If you're a voter and watch him pitch, I don't see how you cannot vote for the guy. I mean, and I think that he's going to get to the point where he's got a decent enough sample. You know, maybe if he's got 100, 110 innings, to me, that's enough. He's got a 6-1 record, a Base Winner ERA that leads the board in as far as overall Base Winner ERA at 2.05. And then Sale is number two in the National League at 2.34. I mean, Sale's definitely deserving. You look at Sale with a 13.3 record. That's a big deal in the Cy Young market. But Skenes is at 6-1, and maybe if he can get into double digits on the win, I don't think it's that far-fetched personally, but it's hard. You know, Jared, it's really tough to figure out what these voters are doing.
Yeah.
I liked Strider so much last year, and his numbers were just so good. And they gave it to Snell, and Snell had like a 100% walk rate or something.
Yep.
And no, not quite that, but it was so high. And so, you know, he was a runaway winner on that. So it's hard to get inside the heads of these guys. But Skenes is definitely, for me, I think he's the best pitcher at this time in the National League.
Yeah, pound for pound, best stuff. But we haven't seen enough of it yet. And that's where I think the voters – it'll be one of the more fascinating – it'll be like a presidential race. Like, we're going to remember this one for a long time. Mark Borchard, pro MLB better. Great stuff. I appreciate the time, pal.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me on. And good job filling in for the voice of sports betting.
Oh, I love that stuff. The voice of sports betting's on vacation, but we're back on a numbers game next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, we are back, and check out VSiN.com. We got all kinds of fun stuff. Let's do a refresh on the site right now, see what's up there. Oh, Adam Burke, 2024 NFL betting guide. The college football guide is out this week. We got Zachary Cohen, Olympic picks. I've got a fun parlay that involved Coco Gauff earlier today that won. So that was fun. A little tennis on the men for you for Zachary Cohen. Wes Reynolds got Olympic golf. Steve Mackin in college football improvements. All kinds of fun stuff. Check it out over at VSiN.com. All right, we are back here on A Numbers Game. It is Monday morning, downtown Las Vegas. I'm Jared Smith, in for Gil all week long. So if you were tuning in here hoping for Gil, you're stuck with me for the week. I promise we'll still have some fun. Coming up at the top of the hour, Jay Kahn. We'll talk some more Olympic betting. I'm curious what Jake has to say, if there's anything specific standing out. Looks like golf, men's and women's tennis on the board. But let's go back and follow up on the discussion that Mark Borchardt just presented to us about Major League Baseball. I learned something from Mark this morning. I did not know that ground ball rate was as high on his list in terms of grading pitchers. I'm going to upgrade that for sure on my numbers. And I really like his first five parlay between Skeens and Marsh. So I'm starting to see some reports about some players that might get moved. I think the Cardinals are going to be involved in a starting pitcher. I would expect the Dodgers to be involved in a starting pitcher. The Orioles, who've already made the move for a starting pitcher, you're going to see him today in Zach Eflin. This is a tough week to bet baseball. Like the All-Star, or just like the trade deadline in the NBA. Mm-hmm. It just like any trade deadline when players, and it's not just the players that get traded. It's the players that might get traded. What's going on in their mind? And I'll give you a great example is Garrett Crochet. I am the father of first innings, as Dustin Sweetelson has dubbed me. I pay attention to every first inning, especially when the big name guys pitch. I've been on Garrett Crochet's Nerfy. Two starts out of the All-Star break. Both starts out of the All-Star break, he has looked shaky. Worse than he's looked all year. Could it be physical? Sure. I think it's mental. Because he's probably getting, hey, this team is interested in you from his agent. This team's interested in you. His agent's probably, every day, he's probably getting a report, or at least some days, this team making an offer. This team wants you. This team wants to do this. Because I'm seeing a lot of news about Garrett Crochet, and if I'm seeing a lot of news, that means the agents are talking about him behind the scenes, and the managers and the GMs and the scouts and all that stuff. So I don't know if that is a direct impact on his average or slightly below average pitching performances the last couple starts, but I'd be betting on that it was.
Yeah, that's he's at least a name that's been brought up. I mean, is there anybody else on your radar of like, all I keep hearing is, okay, this team needs starting pitching.
Player on the
who's
White
the
Sox
actual
that
starting
can play?
Who's the actual pitchers that are Fetty. Actually going to go?
Fetty. I think Scooble will get talked about being moved, but I don't think Scooble gets moved.
Yeah.
I thought Scooble was going to get moved. I think it might be too much because it usually, well.
Do we see the odds move on Cy Young if he doesn't go? Like,
That's a good question.
Does he become more of a favorite right away, like 20
That's
cents more?
So what you're asking is, this is basically essentially what Kelly is asking, and it's a really good question. It's frankly a question that a bookmaker can better answer than me. Kelly is asking if the AL Cy Young market is baking in a fail-safe in case Scooble gets traded to the Dodgers, meaning he should be a minus 150 favorite, but we're trimming 20 cents off the price
right?
Because there's a risk involved that he might get moved to another league. Then you have to ask yourself two questions as a follow-up. Has he done enough to already win the American League Cy Young? I think no. And two, would he become the favorite in the National League? How would the voters view that? Do you carry over what he did in the American League? I think the answer to that question is no. I don't think there is any
the problem is
trade baking going on with the numbers. That would be my guess.
Okay. So, I mean, I think the answer is it
probably. But I could be wrong.
It probably will move, but I'm only asking it from an actual bookmaking perspective, right? It probably will move because people are going to be like, oh, great, he's still there.
It's definitely
going to
move.
Bet it.
It's definitely going to move because people will bet it.
People will bet, yeah.
I don't know.
From an odds-making perspective,
I
don't know.
It's a really good question that I've never considered that.
If I was
how
booking,
often does that happen?
Yeah,
it's probably never happened before where the odds-on favorite to win MVP or Cy Young
gets traded
mid-season. I, it might have happened. Here's when it might have happened last. This might be the last time it's happened. CC Sabathia, 2008.
Mm.
When he got traded from the Indians, at that point we could still call them the Indians, to the Brewers.
Yeah.
And he had a stretch with the Brewers that was so good. I think I was literally fresh out of college at that point, working my first job. So don't hammer me if I don't remember what the odds were doing back then.
Right, yeah.
But I would be willing to bet that he was considered for the National League Cy Young that year. Because even though it was only like a 60-day window. And he might have been considered for the Cy Young in both leagues that year. That's how good Sabathia was. He was arguably an MVP. He was hitting home runs for the Brewers in the second half of that season. They lost to the Phillies in the playoffs. The Phillies went on to win the World Series. That was one. You know who else got traded that year who also might have gotten consideration was Manny Ramirez. But I don't think he switched leagues. Or did he? No. Did he go from Cleveland to No, I don't think he was with Cleveland then.
That was the Red Sox and the Dodgers.
So, yeah, he did switch leagues.
Yeah. What is funny is, like, I'm just Googling this stuff right now.
Look up the 2008 voting for the Cy Young and the MVP, and I'm curious if Ramirez got any National League votes and if Sabathia got any National League votes for either. I think Baseball Reference does a good graph of it. And, again, this is historical-type stuff here, guys. Like, we are talking about, and I think if you had to set odds on Scooble being traded, I would set it 60 to the no. 60% no, 70% no, 30, 40% yes. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I feel much better about some of the lesser guys. Like, for example, Eric Fetty's going to get traded immediately. I think Garrett Crochet might not get traded. I think he will, but he might not. It's more 50-50, whereas Eric Fetty to me is like 90-10. To me, that's the name I've seen mentioned a lot. Eflin was another guy that we've seen mentioned a lot. The Rays, obviously, were big sellers. You got anything there?
Yeah, so this was Sabathia finished fifth in NL Cy Young voting.
And he was in the league for 60 days.
With a whopping... He got 17 starts, but, you know...
In 2 months after the trade deadline. That's how he pitched every third day.
Didn't compare to Lincecum's 33, though.
Yeah, Lincecum... Yes.
Who took it down. And then Manny Ramirez finished fourth in MVP voting...
In 2 months!
In the NL, yes. And...
You played, what, 50, 60 games with the Dodgers that year?
53 games, yep.
53 games, he finished fourth in the MVP. That is in...
And he had 17 homers and 53 RBIs in those.
He was...
Wow.
That might have been the biggest blockbuster trade year ever.
And Sabathia finished sixth in NL MVP voting.
You won't see a pitcher finish in the top 10 of an MVP vote anytime soon, anytime again. I mean, that just feels... But you know what? I think it was Mitch who tweeted... speaking of the American League Cy Young, about why Emmanuel Clase is not getting any votes. And he's not. I mean, he's like 100-1 right now, and he's arguably the best reliever in baseball. I really struggle with the closers to win Cy Young, and here's why. It's just not something that gets a lot of fanfare. Like, the best closer in baseball, Mariano Rivera, never came close to winning a Cy Young. So how can you say Emmanuel Clase, I'm not saying he's not having a great year, but if the greatest closer that ever lived never won a Cy Young,
yeah,
how can we give it to any closer ever? That's kind of where I'm at with the closer. And maybe we need to come up with a separate Cy Young. And I think they have one. Isn't it the Rolaids?
Reliever.
Don't get me wrong. It doesn't have quite the same ring to it as Cy Young, the Rolaids reliever of the year.
Also, I believe Ben Wilson and I discovered that it was the Rolaids reliever of the year.
That's Rolaids.
Rolaids doesn't sponsor it anymore, I believe. Yes, I believe we found this.
Pour one out for Rolaids.
But, yeah, there are odds up for reliever
it's going to be Class A. I mean, I would assume he's a massive favorite. And this is the reason why I think this is valid is because it ties back into what we're dealing with Paul Skeens. You have to put yourself inside the mind of a voter. Paul Skeens is a gajillion-dollar favorite to win Rookie of the Year. Like, yeah. The market's over. It's done. He's going to win that award. The voters then have to make a decision. Do we double down? I think it's fair to say you can in terms of the talent. But there's a factor involved that says, well, Skeens is probably going to, A, win a Cy Young at some point in his career, and he's already going to be decorated this season. So let's pivot to another pitcher.
It's the Wembanyama argument. And I bring this up for NL MVP too. Like I think if there's anybody that gets remotely close to being considered with Shohei, there are voters that are going to think that way. That he's not pitching this year, he's going to be pitching in the future. We're going to give him this award like five times. Let's figure out a different guy to go to this year.
The Shohei MVP discussion is intriguing as well. I think the baseball futures markets are my favorite of the futures markets because of the length of the season.
Yeah.
It gives you these waves to kind of ride, just like surfing in the Olympics. Speaking of the Olympics, we're going to talk a little bit on, I don't know if he's going to talk surfing, but Jaycon joins us next.